So welcome to Ecclesia. I think, I hope, I am on. Let me know if you guys can hear me and see me all right, because this thing is being super wonky right now. All my Ecclesia folks out there, can y'all hear me? Does it look all right? Everything good? All right. I mean, we tested it. We made sure it was working like 15 minutes ago. This is how it goes every time. And then it's like, go live, nothing. So, all right. I think we're good now. So we will keep rolling with it. Glad to see y'all on here. Thanks for joining us at Ecclesia Hattiesburg this week for our next installment of televangelism. Again, another week of wish I could see you in person. Look forward to one day doing that again sometime soon, hopefully. But thanks for being here. For anyone who doesn't know anything about the community, we are a non-denominational community. Typically, we meet at Parkway Heights Methodist Church in their sanctuary on Sunday nights. We rent that space from them. And we will be back there again sometime soon. My guess is probably not till July sometime. But we're working around their schedule, and we're trying to roll things out in a way that'd be safe. And just listening to you guys as we had some polls that we put out there and that kind of thing, without kids programming and kids having to sit with parents, and we had more people that were wanting to keep doing this until we can kind of do the full-fledged programming. So for now, this is how we're going to do things. So yeah. Thanks for joining us, and hopefully if you are a part of Ecclesia, you got one of the links to join us in a Zoom afterwards for a meeting to just catch up with each other, see how everyone's doing, and hopefully you'll join us for that somewhere around 5:30, although we're getting late start here because of technical issues, and I tend to talk a lot, so it'll probably be a little bit later than 5:30. It's been a good week. I hope you've had a good week as well. I was happy to see some of you guys at the march downtown. And happier and proud of the city for the way that went. And those of you who participated, thanks for being there. For everyone out there in Hattiesburg who made it a peaceful and positive thing, I'm grateful for that. I know for a few weeks, COVID was kind of found its way into every sermon. And right now, the racial justice issues and the upheaval and the marches is kind of finding its way into everything as we wrestle with what it means to be a follower of Jesus in the world at hand. And this week is no different. Our text this week from the lectionary is actually in the Gospel of Matthew. And it should be from Matthew 9:35 all the way to almost the end of chapter 10, I believe it is. It's a ton of scripture. But just in the first few verses of Matthew 9:35, there's just this kind of idea that I got stuck on this week that I'm going to pull at a little bit, which is kind of the way sermons normally work for me. It's like that little thread that's pulled up off of a shirt or a sweater that you just kind of keep yanking on, and then you could end up making a whole nother sweater with it by the time you're done. And so we're actually in Matthew 9:35, and we're just going to read through 10:1. And then I want to think about kind of Jesus and the crowd and his ministry to the crowd, and we'll talk a little bit about that. And then we'll get to the good stuff, which is actually just seeing each other's faces on Zoom later on. So Matthew 9:35 through 10:1 says this. Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom and healing every disease and sickness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless, like a sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field." Chapter 10, verse 1. Jesus called his 12 disciples to him and gave them authority to drive out impure spirits and to heal every disease and sickness. So Jesus is going out and he's healing all the sickness, all the disease, all those who are needing help. And he's seeing these crowds and he's having compassion on them, and he's empowering his people to do the same work. Now, typically, if you've been in church a lot, you've almost certainly heard this passage preached. It's kind of familiar. It's got one particular phrase, a crowd being like a sheep without a shepherd, that typically I've kind of heard as the focus of this passage, right? And honestly, when I was growing up, when that phrase came out, like a sheep without a shepherd, those sermons were typically about whatever group of people we liked least at the time, right? Whoever we saw as those people out there that are causing trouble or that are not living the way they're supposed to or whatever. And those sermons ended up being a bit judgmental and paternalistic and kind of us looking down their noses and saying, oh, those poor lost sheep who don't know anything. They don't know what we know. They're not in the in-group like we're in. They're not set apart like we are set apart. I mean, those poor, unenlightened, huddled masses who just aren't, haven't arrived like I've arrived, right? And that tended to be the way the sermons went when that phrase came out. And it's an appealing way to talk about it because, you know, I end up in the catbird seat if I do that, right? That's a weird phrase, catbird seat. I end up in the catbird seat, which is an actual bird that sits up high and I believe has a call that sounds demeaning or like it's making fun of you. And so the people used to talk about the bird, I think it was in England, that sits up high and like mocks you from up on high. That's where you get the catbird seat from. Because you definitely want to know that. So anyways, but this focus on the verses and I think gets at how we typically view the crowd and how we typically view others. And I don't know, I just want to get it because there's something that is here that I think is unusual in a very beautiful way with Jesus. And that is that Jesus is seeing this crowd of all these people who are lost without a shepherd, who are harassed and lost without a shepherd, it says. And Jesus, who is the one who's allowed to judge, right, as God, sees the crowd and has compassion for the crowd. The idea that they were harassed, the idea that they were without a shepherd, that they didn't know what they were doing and they needed help and they were dependent and all these things, that did not produce in Jesus anger. It did not produce a sense of looking down on them or judgment. It produced compassion in Jesus. This whole crowd, this whole group of people who needed all this help, who had no idea what they were doing, it produced compassion. And normally for us, I think that those kind of that crowd is going to be the object of ridicule or wrath. And not compassion, right? Crowds are not easy for me to have compassion on. They don't normally produce compassion in me, right? I mean, now crowds will produce all kinds of strong feelings in us, and I think we know that right now probably more than ever. It's hard to moderate how you feel about a crowd. It tends to be on one end or the other. If my social media feed is any indication, then most of us either love or hate the protests. I've seen very little moderated commentary on the protests that are going on, right? Either the crowd represents the salvation of everything in our culture or the total demise of our world, right? There's not much in between. Crowds evoke strong feelings. And I know everything in our culture right now is polarizing and you can only seem to be 100% for or 100% against things right now in our culture, which is not a good thing. But crowds evoke strong feelings. And to be honest, compassion just isn't usually one of them for me, right? I don't think compassion is what most people is evoked when they see a crowd. Whether it's the crowd that's out there protesting each week to keep the state flag the way it is, or it's the BLM protests, or it's guys arming themselves and storming the state house because they have to wear masks and can't go to buffets or whatever that was, that, you know, all the liberties that were being infringed upon. Crowds make me feel a lot of things. I have good feelings and I have bad feelings. I may feel empowered or I may feel frightened or happy or angry. But the truth is, it's hard to feel genuine compassion for a crowd because it's too big. Right? It's hard to feel compassion for a crowd because it's too much to really throw your heart and your arms around, right? Something that big and compassion don't really go together very well. I would say right now, this is one of the biggest hurdles that I'll say us white people are facing right now. I mean, let's say that that one is waking up to problems that they didn't know were there, or are being challenged to rethink the way their own privilege and the way the systems of the, you know, this country work, and what is fair and unfair and equitable and inequitable. I think it's overwhelming to try and have genuine compassion for that big of a thing, for that big of a crowd, for something as big and systemic as racism, right? And I think it's why so many of us white folks will try desperately to find anything or anyone that will kind of explain it away. Because if it's not really true, if it's not really the way my, you know, my black friends say it is, then I can handle that, because it's just too big to feel genuine compassion about, right? Because not only, if it's true, not only what does that say about my own understandings, about my own perceptions, about my own privileges, but what exactly am I supposed to do to fix that, right? That's such a big, you're talking about 400, 500 years of history. What am I supposed to do to fix that, right? It's overwhelming. It's hard to get your arms around. Frustration, anger, denial, I feel lots of things. Compassion is a hard thing to feel for something that big, for something that crowded. And yet Jesus seems to be able to do it. I struggle with it. It's always been far easier for me, and I imagine it the same way, to have compassion on an individual than a crowd, than a group, right? And I think we're all like this. So if I told you the fact that, by the last numbers I saw, today, in this 24-hour period, about 21,000 people in the world are probably going to die from hunger or malnutrition. 21,000, right? Now, when you hear a number like that, you're probably like me. You feel bad, maybe disgusted by that fact. You feel conflicted by it, knowing that you're going to have a nice meal tonight. You feel a lot of things. But you probably have a governor on how much compassion you can actually feel, because 21,000 is a lot to throw your heart and arms around. And there's going to be another 21,000 tomorrow, and another 21,000 on Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday, right? You start getting compassion fatigue before I'm even finished reading the statistics or talking about it, right? And we end up just kind of shaking our head, heading home and eating dinner and kind of throwing up our hands on what to do about it. It's too big. But if I brought a starving 8-year-old child to your door and knocked on the door, that'd be a different situation, wouldn't it, right? I bet you would shed tears. I bet you would give up your dinner tonight. I bet you would figure out an answer. You'd find a way to feed that kid. That child would not be laying on your doorstep the next day. No, you would take care of the problem. You would be filled with compassion because there's a person in front of you and not just an idea or a group or a crowd, for which it is very hard to feel compassionate. It's hard to have compassion for a crowd, to empathize with all of that. And it is hard not to have compassion for the starving child in front of you, right? I think you can see this tension happening real time in some of the videos that we've seen out there, where the police are clashing with protesters, and sometimes it gets violent, and sometimes there's oversteps on the policing side, and sometimes there's too much aggression on the protest side, or the riots that are happening. You see this kind of thing happening where, well, I think the perfect example is that there's the footage of the police. This wasn't in Minnesota. It was someplace else, Buffalo, I believe, where the police were moving forward on the riot gear, and the 75-year-old protester from the Catholic Workers group moves towards them. Not in a threatening way, but moves towards them. And a couple of the police officers shove him. And they shoved him too hard, and he fell to the ground, and he hit his head. And I don't encourage you to go and look up the video. It's really kind of disturbing. It was too aggressive. It didn't need to happen that way. Although I can't imagine the pressure of being in riot gear and having crowds of people yelling at you. I don't pretend to understand that. But he falls hard. He hits his head. He literally begins to bleed on the concrete in front of them. And If in that video, if you watch it, again, I'm not recommending you do, but if you watch it, you can see the different officers begin to have this very tension we're talking about. Now, there's some that just walk on by, some that don't see. One of the ones that pushes him and then sees what happens, half circles back, begins to shake his head, kind of, you just see him being torn. And you see some other officers, too, trying to look down. Do I call it in? Do I not call it in? Do I address this or not? And you see what happens when those protesters, right, when this crowd, this kind of faceless, nameless, storyless crowd becomes a grandpa bleeding on the ground, right? When the 21,000 starving people becomes the 8-year-old child on your front doorstep, right? It may be hard to have compassion on a crowd of people yelling at you and holding signs and protesting, but it's harder not to have compassion on the elderly man laid out on the concrete in front of you and bleeding, right? Now, it's possible. It's possible to have compassion on a crowd, and it's possible to step over that guy who's bleeding on the ground. Certainly, it has been done and arguably was done in that situation by some people. They're both possible, but I don't think they come naturally. Hard to have compassion on a crowd. And this is one of the things I love so much about the person and ministry of Jesus, is how big and small it was at the same time, right? Jesus came to change the world, to offer salvation to mankind, to redeem the systems, to defeat the powers and the principalities. These are big ideas, things that it's hard to wrap your mind and arms and heart around. And yet Jesus also didn't seem to see the crowd as just some big, nebulous, faceless, nameless thing. Jesus worked on such grand levels, but also got so small and so granular, right? Jesus splits time in two and spits in the eye of some dude to heal him so he can see again, right? I mean, Jesus defeats death and raises a servant from the dead. Jesus heals and offers salvation to all of humanity and helped out Bob one day, right? That probably wasn't the name. Bob is not a very ancient Aramaic name, but you see what I'm getting at. It's both big and small at the same time in a way that I have a hard time. That's a lot of range that I don't have, right? And Jesus had compassion on the crowd. And I think part of the reason why Jesus had compassion on the crowd is because he always saw the individual story, the individual need in need of hope and help and healing, right? It says he was healing every disease, every sickness. It's like the guy who will stay and sign every autograph afterwards. Right? Jesus is not passing anybody by. He's healing every one of them. So Jesus had compassion on the crowd because Jesus saw the crowd. He didn't talk about them in broad, sweeping statements. He saw them, their own hurts, their own stories, their own needs, their own desperation. Now, I assume if Jesus could rise from the dead and could walk on water and calm the storm, then he could have just healed the whole crowd, right? By that, I mean, like, just hold up his hands and say some magic phrase, and then every person who couldn't walk could suddenly walk, and who had leprosy no longer would have it, and people who were hopeless would have hope and grace fill their hearts magically all at once, like some big incantation, right? And then be done with it and beat the Baptist to lunch. I mean, I'm assuming Jesus could do that, right? But he doesn't do this. No, the living embodiment of the creator of all things heals this guy, raises this child, redeems this woman. He heals each individual in front of him, and he empowers his disciples to do the same. And I think that's an important lesson for us. It's why we chose some of the things we did at Ecclesia when we started, 14 years ago, right? When we originally got together, we said we want to have compassion for those that we feel like are being left behind. And for us, it was some of our students in the area. But we didn't want to just, we say this all the time, but we didn't want to love all the children of the world, because how do you love all the children of the world? Now, let's not love all the children of the world. Let's get into this one school. Let's help this kid read. Let's get this one a violin for music classes. Let's make sure this one has a clean uniform, right? We got small so we could love big. Because we follow Jesus, but we're not Jesus. I can't love a crowd. But I can love a kid in front of me, right? We got small so we could get big, because unlike Jesus, we're not big enough to do it all. If we had set our mission on fixing all the inequities in education in Mississippi 14 years ago, if that had been our goal, we'd be done with it by now. Not because we would have fixed it, but because we would have fatigued on it. Right? It's hard to keep a compassion and passion for this big, nameless, faceless thing. We need to get small, right? These same principles apply to all this renewed energy around systemic inequity and racial inequality. And I don't know where you're coming from. I don't know how you feel about it. Maybe you're having trouble feeling compassion for the crowds at all. Or maybe you feel like a fire in your bones right now, but it's too big to know what to do about it. Like, it's just too much. What do you really do? I don't know enough. I haven't studied enough. I don't have all the answers yet. Wherever you find yourself in that spectrum, wherever you are there, get small. Get small so you can love big. That's the statement of the day. Get small so you can love big. You will not find or maintain compassion for the herd if you don't identify with and help the individual sheep, right? You got to leave the 99 and find the one for the time being. Listen to the individual stories of those that you already know. Create the kind of friendships that allow you to hear those stories. Believe those stories when you hear them. Learn about this person's hunger. Learn about this one's fear. Learn about that, the injustices and pains in this person's life. Get small. Love the person in front of you. And when the opportunity comes to do something for that person, to serve that person, to love that person, to be a part of the healing for that person, do it. Do that. Don't just walk by. Don't fixate on the overwhelming crowd. Don't wait until it all makes sense and you have all the right answers, because that's never going to happen. Just do it. Hear the stories, learn the lives, and if given the chance, help heal the wounds of those in front of you. Do whatever you can. And that's all you can do. I can't tell you how shocked Mike Dixon 20 years ago would be to see Mike Dixon yesterday at that march. And in some ways, I feel like I'm finally starting to be able to really see the crowd and maybe even have compassion on the crowd in ways I never would have before. And this is solely because I have had the gift of friendships and lives shared with me. Because I have had the privilege to get small and get close before I ever attempted to love big. Right? Give yourself that same grace. Give yourself that same grace. You don't have to know all the intricacies. You don't have to be able to write out the litany of sins in our history. You don't have to understand all the sordid economics and educational inequities and fill in the blanks. You don't have to understand everything about everything right now. There's time to learn. Just have compassion for the person in front of you. And if we keep doing that, if we keep doing that small but profoundly important thing, maybe one day we can have compassion for the many. Get small to love big. Because in the end, it's all we can do anyway. I'm going to end this there. Thank you again for joining us. If you need anything, if you want to know any more about Ecclesia, don't hesitate to reach out to us. Those of you that want to be a part of the Zoom meeting, we'll start that here in just a couple minutes. Thanks for being on here. Peace be with you.